Hello, everybody. Welcome to What the Frick Live, 107.7 FM New Orleans. Will Martinez is with me tonight, but I don't know what happened to his camera. There we are.
How's it going? Good evening.
Great. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in on 107.7 FM New Orleans. I said New Orleans the first time, so I had to redo it.
New Orleans.
My mom's like, don't be a weirdo. We're going to be talking weird stuff tonight.
We have a lot of stuff to talk about tonight. Yeah. Our guest is going to be somebody that has a lot of stuff about UFOs we're going to be talking about tonight. So,
And Midwest Weird Fest. I love how that rhymes. I love it.
It actually goes well.
Yeah, it does. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in. If you're watching via, we're streaming live tonight on Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, Twitter. Rumble gave me issues today. They're doing some updates, so we're not streaming live on Rumble, but this will be uploaded to it. If you're watching via Facebook and you're leaving comments, because we highly recommend comments, that keeps us in the algorithm, and it comes up Facebook user, please go to StreamYard.com/Facebook, give StreamYard permission to use your name and image. We want to know who we're talking to. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in. We love you. And Will has a podcast too, Dark Fringe Radio. Tell us what's going on over there on the Dark Fringe side.
Well, on the Dark Fringe, we have a new episode coming out tomorrow. We're going to be talking about Native American monsters and creatures. So we're going to really be getting into all of that. We're going to be talking about everything from the Wendigo to everything else. A lot of really cool stuff we're going to be talking about. Again, it's a part of history that we don't really talk about too much, and we kind of like forget about. And I really believe a lot of the Native American culture and traditions and beliefs and stuff like that still roam, of course, in North America. And we just kind of forget about them. So, again, that's what we kind of delve into tomorrow. So, check it out. DarkFringeRadio.com.
Skinwalker Ranch going to be in part of that?
No. We've done actually an episode before on Skinwalker Ranch. I hate like really like going over another, you know, again and again and droning on. But, no, a Skinwalker Ranch is a completely different. Yeah, that you could do an episode of Skinwalker Ranch on its own. So,
well, I have a theory of Skinwalker Ranch. Our next guest next week is Mike Ricksecker. He does the Alaska Triangle, but I think Skinwalker Ranch is a triangle. All that stuff. So anyway, all this is going together. So listen to Will's new show dropping tomorrow, darkfringeradio.com. Yes. You can follow on Facebook at Dark Fringe Radio too. So that's awesome. Can't wait to listen to that one. So tonight we have a doctor on the show.
Yes, we do.
Somebody call the doctor.
I
don't think we've ever had a doctor on. I love it.
Hey, listen. Somebody passes out, then we got a doctor to revive
it's
him.
Gonna
so,
be,
hey,
it's going
to
be me.
It's going to be you.
I already look like death anyway. Dark circles, all that kind of stuff. Pills can be. It's going to be me. And plus, I'm a prodding the 13th baby, so it's going to be me. We have Dr. Dean Bertram with us. He got a PhD in history from the University of Sydney, Australia, from the land down under. His doctoral dissertation was titled Flying Saucer Culture, a Historical Survey of American UFO Belief, which intrigued me because this is America and he's from Australia. So are we the only ones that believe in UFO? He's also a filmmaker, writer, host of Talking Weird, co-host of Mysterious Library. Both podcasts are part of the Untold Radio Network. He is also the director and founder of Midwest Weird Fest. That's why we're talking about all things weird tonight. So we're going to bring Dr. Dean Bertram on right now to the show. Welcome, Dr. Dean.
Thank you so much for having me, Emily and Will. It's great to be here.
Well, thanks
for coming on.
My pleasure.
Well, first and foremost, I want to also say this. Your logo for Talking Weird and then your website, the little, looks like octopus. I don't know. I love that.
Oh, thank you.
Reminds me of submarine or something. I don't know.
It could be some submarine creator. It could be from the vast distances of space. Who knows where it's from? It's weird, though. That's the main thing.
Well, since this is your first time on the show, did I leave anything out? Is there anything else you'd like to add? Let everybody know anything else about you?
No, I appreciate it. It was a wonderful intro. Thank you.
Well, thank you. We have a lot of people tuning in tonight. We have Lauren that's saying hello. We have Joe Fox in the house saying hello. Dr. Dean, Adam Ramos, Hi, Dr. Ding. Jonathan Zertucci. I used to work with him. So good to see you. Greetings. Hello, Emily, Will, Dr. Dean. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in. If you are watching this, please ask questions. Share this out. Share it. That's our guest. It helps our show. It helps the network. So thank you all very much. So, Will, I'm going to let you start this off with the fun.
Well, oh, thanks. Thanks for throwing me under the bus, Emily. And that's great. I appreciate it. No,
I don't have my green notebook. We talked about it. Mysteriously
she lost her playbook.
I lost my playbook. I listened to interviews this week with you, Dean, and everything. Oh, and we've talked. I've been on your show. And so we know each other. But I listened and I wrote down all kinds of notes. And I'm like, what's missing? When we were backstage before the show and I left for a moment, I was like, my green notebook's gone. So I went through the house. I can't find it. So we'll take the lead.
Okay. So, Dr. Dean, I appreciate again for you coming on the podcast. A couple things. I know you're a historian of ufology here in America. As you know, in 2001, there was Disclosure Project. I actually interviewed Dan Willis. He was one of the military personnel who came out, was a whistleblower in that case. He gave a pretty damning testimony as to the things that he witnessed and saw as he was someone on base in a military base and actually saw craft come down and actually disable all of their missiles and nuclear capabilities in the base. And they take off and they're pretty much in the dark for about another hour, an hour and a half. So, we see this, we hear these people coming out and now all of a sudden we start seeing, a few weeks ago, almost a month ago, all these objects being shot down in the sky. Is this another revolution? Are we seeing that now? Is that what's going on? Or is it another maybe a smoke screen? What's your take on this?
Yeah, that's good. There's a lot to unpack there. And it's a very good question. Yeah. I think when we hear an announcement, whether it's from a whistleblower or whether it's an actual official Department of Defense press conference, and there's talk about UFOs, I think we have to be wary of, is there a reason that they're using that type of language or that they're talking about UFOs turning off nuclear power stations, for example? Not every whistleblower, I think, in this space is actually going entirely independent. You know what I mean? I wonder how many of them have been told, you can go and say this, you can go and say that. So when I hear talk of disclosure or when I hear, again, whether it's an official or whether it's an unofficial government mouthpiece telling me these type of things, I'm suspicious for the simple reason that there's a long history of the government, for various reasons, some of them quite possibly quite honorably, to keep the Soviets at bay or to protect some type of technology which we don't want the Chinese to find out about or whatever. But there's a long history of the government playing these spin games with UFO belief. I mean, we could go through it from the very beginning, but perhaps one of the most classic examples is the Benowitz affair in the late 70s, where an electrical engineer who worked in New Mexico opposite Kirtland Air Force Base thought he was picking up ET signals and seeing UFOs on the base. His name was Paul Benowitz. And being a good patriot, he went to the base and said, hey, I think I'm picking up all these signals from ETs, beaming in or out of your base. What he picked up on was a real government secret technology program. And so instead of just swearing him to secrecy, which they probably should have done, they decided, and this is all on the historical record, we know this happened, they decided to spin it that he really was picking up on ET messages, and they fed him more and more data. They took him on flights over supposed UFO crashes. They gave him a computer which supposedly decoded the ET messages. And this was all just baloney. But so much of the tales that come out of the Benowitz affair, things like underground alien bases, for example.
The DUMS? Is that where you talk, like DUMS?
Deep underground military bases.
Oh, yeah. Some of that stuff no doubt is real as well, but the ET versions of it, so many of the belief systems that a lot of people who have about UFOs now come out of the Benowitz affair and a number of people who were involved with that affair. So Rick Doty was the head of the AFOSI program, which was kind of tricking Paul Benowitz. Rick Doty also was the front man in giving Linda Moulton Howe essentially what were the kind of proto version of the MJ-12 documents, or letting her read them in a military base. Later, the MJ-12 documents themselves got in the hands of William Moore and Jamie Chandere, who were also contacts with Rick Doty. In fact, William Moore was an asset of Rick Doty, and later at the MUFON convention in 1989 admitted to, we were leaking all this, you know, nonsense, and we were gathering information and we were feeding nonsense. And so many of these tales, and incidentally, William Moore is the guy who wrote the first book about Roswell as well, the big book that broke the Roswell story. So when we start to think about MJ-12, the Roswell story, underground bases, you can trace the popularity of this belief system to this literally this small cadre of people in the intelligence, in the military intelligence world, and some of their assets. And whether you want to believe those things are true or not, they got injected into ufology by a small group of people in military intelligence. So whenever I hear these days somebody who has any connection with the government coming forward and whistleblowing or telling a tale, you can't help but when you put it in the context of the Benowitz affair, and there's plenty of other examples as well, but the Benowitz affair is a great one because so many of these things we believe now about UFOs come out again of this cadre of, you know, half a dozen people, then I'm very suspicious. And you see games being played. An example would be speaking about, you mentioned the objects flying over America and whether they were Chinese weather balloons, which one clearly was, or what the other things were. But the language the Defense Department was using in press conferences, calling them unidentified flying objects.
On purpose, right.
Well, that's going to push buttons.
You're going to hear UFO, you're going to hear entity. They have these things, these code words that brings up people. It triggers people.
UAPs.
Exactly.
And in my opinion, with these flying objects that came over, because they blew them up and they couldn't even find the pieces to them. So we had a interception, a counter. I believe those were airstrikes actually on our country. And they were using mini missiles, which if you did annihilate those things, you're not going to find a piece on the ground. So I think that they are using UFO terminology to deter us from thinking that we're actually being attacked, the United States. Because if they said we're being attacked, imagine the country.
Well, you know what's funny though, Emily. Though, let me jump in. It was kind of interesting that because me and my friend Jay, we talk about this all the time, and we're like, as soon as the government says, you know, unidentified flying objects, people are going to flip out. You know, religious zealots are going to do this and talk about them as, you know, demons and this and that. And, you know, everybody's going to have their own opinion and people are just going to go wild. Nothing happened. Nothing happened.
No, they destroyed the missiles.
Oh, great. Oh, we saw it. Yeah, we destroyed them. Great. Okay, no big deal. I mean, again, what's going on here?
And that's what the hard thing is to determine what the purpose of any of this type of disinfo is. And we can all have different theories, like Emily's theory, which seems totally legitimate, that it's to, you know, if it was a genuine foreign attack, it's to kind of de-escalate the fear, to perhaps an idea that it is to just keep this, to keep the idea of UFOs front and center in the public and media consciousness, the way that it has been since the Tic Tac videos were dropped and became front page, you know, news and the New York Times, and how that led to kind of a sea change in both the way the media and the government were looking at UFOs again. Because when we look at the history of UFO belief, because nobody can really speak about UFOs. If somebody tells you they're an expert on UFOs, they're kidding. But we can talk about what people believe. There's an historical record of what people believed at different times. Mm-hmm. But if we look from about the late 1960s up until that Tic Tac video drop, that New York Times story, UFOs weren't taken seriously by the military, at least not as far as in a PR position, and they weren't taken seriously by the media in this country in any meaningful sense either. So after the Condon Committee of 1969, which was essentially when, under congressional pressure, the UFO study had to be taken out of the hands of the Air Force, which wasn't trusted by a lot of people anymore, given to an independent university study at the University of Colorado, and then we could talk about the Condon Committee forever, but we won't. Basically, what comes out of that is the Condon Committee saying there's nothing here the Air Force have to investigate. There's nothing to worry about. And that was kind of the end of the official discussion about UFOs up until the Tic Tac video. So you have to ask the question, why all of a sudden when we do this Tic Tac video drop and it becomes front page and then it leads to congressional hearings and it leads to all of these official, you know, new studies by the government. What's the purpose? Why? And don't get me wrong. I do think the government was probably doing something with UFOs in that period, regardless of the reality of the phenomenon. There would have been people doing perhaps in, you know, more secretive programs. And speaking of that, actually, there's a wonderful documentary coming out soon called Accidental Truth by MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network in America, directed by Ron James. We did the world premiere at Midwest Weird Fest, which is why I've seen it. It hasn't been released yet. But it talks a lot about this kind of change, this kind of sea change in the approach to UFOs. And also it talks about how there was government programs prior to this period, but they were just kind of swept under the rug. So people should look for Accidental Truth when it drops, because it really, I think it's a good hour and a half to bring you up to speed. Hopefully it'll be out in the next couple of months. But my point is there's definitely been a sea change, even though there's been no disclosure. Like people are like, oh, we never got the disclosure. We didn't, but we got a sea change in the way that the government and all official bodies are now looking at the UFO phenomenon. I, for whatever reason, I think it's important to notice that massive change that happened relatively recently.
Mm. Well, I have a video.
Said every ufologist, right? I have a video.
I don't know. I don't think it's going to be what you think it's going to be. But this, Let's just play this, my little ticky-tocky. They're not going to ban TikTok, by the way. They're just not. They're not. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. It's all about money, and Zuckerberg is losing, so I love it. So anyway, this is a ticky-tocky video. I'm going to play real quick.
Right.
Before Roswell, a man patented a flying saucer. First time a flying saucer-like aircraft was ever drawn up was by the American-Dutch polymath Alexander George Weigers. Alexander was a philosopher, painter, and polymath, but he was also an electrical engineer. In the 1920s, he drew up plans for what he called the discopter. The discopter was a vertical liftoff aircraft that looked very much like what was later called the flying saucer. He made numerous detailed drawings of the aircraft and portrayed them in various American cities like San Francisco and Chicago. He sent detailed plans for his aircraft to all the branches of the US military and was eventually told they were intrigued by his designs. Weiger later accused the military of stealing his designs and thought that all the sightings of UFOs in the United States were actually his own aircraft.
Well. That got deep.
that did get deep. Well, speaking of what the U.S. government knew were their own aircraft, there's a CIA study, it's a CIA historian who wrote this paper. And when I say a CIA historian, I mean somebody employed by the CIA who's actually, you know, takes care of their historical records. I think the paper came out, I don't know, in the late 90s, early 2000s, and it was essentially saying that the CIA were conscious in the 1960s that something like, I don't know, 60-something percent of supposed saucer sightings in this country were misidentifications of things like, you know, the U-2 and various other state-of-the-art American aircraft. And they were happy to spin that story, rightfully so, because it's better to have the headline saying, you know, man saw flying saucer than man saw state-of-the-art U.S. military, you know, flying weapon or whatever, spy plane or whatever. You don't want the Soviets to know what you're doing. So I think a lot of the things seen, regardless of what we just saw then about the potential that flying saucers were invented in the 1920s, but I do think that a lot of the things seen in American skies over the years have been our own technology and continue to be our own technology. The Tic Tac videos, assuming they're real, assuming it's not some big psyop, I'm sure that, so I can't be sure. Like I said, nobody can be sure about that physical reality of flying saucers or what they are or aren't, but I would put money on the fact that that's probably our technology. Mm. And people say, and they, do you notice how they roll out Navy pilots all the time? They roll out a Navy pilot who says, well, I saw it and it's nothing like what we've got. That Navy pilot, I mean, God bless them for their service, and they're probably wonderful people, and they know what we have as far as what we're flying in the battlefield. They know what the Chinese have because they're taught how to fight that, and what the Russians have, but they don't know what they're testing in Dreamland or what Skunk Works have built.
Swamp gas. Remember that swamp gas incident? I honestly think that it was our military playing jokes on our own military. I think they released some air flying devices, UFOs, and tested them against their own personnel.
Very possible.
Very possible, yeah.
Swamp gas my ass. That's a book, by the way. Everybody go read it. I read it. It's a book. Yeah.
So. Sounds like a t-shirt slogan or a bumper sticker.
Yeah, definitely.
There we go. T-shirt. Everybody, we got merch now. Go. It's in that link tree. Go to Swamp Gas My Ass is going to be on t-shirt this week. Go buy it. Go ahead.
Dr. Dean, can I ask you another question?
Of course.
If you don't mind. And Emily, if you don't mind, if I don't jump in.
No,
here
go.
As well.
Right ahead.
What is your opinion on individuals such as that are the forefront of all this ufology and supposed disclosure and so on and so forth? For instance, like Stephen Greer, he came out with a pretty interesting documentary and, talking about disclosure and everything. What's your opinion on people like that? And like maybe Lou Elizondo and all these people that are saying, they have high claims. You know, these people are saying a lot of very interesting things.
I think they're slightly different, both Elizondo and Greer. I like some of Greer's stuff. I really do. I love the Cosmic Hoax documentary, not because I think his ultimate thesis is correct, but I think his surface level thesis is correct, that most of this stuff is ours or is psyops and it's not really ETs. Where Greer loses me is where he spins it at the end of that Cosmic Hoax documentary and says there really are ETs, but these aren't the ETs. And it's just to trick us to make us think all ETs are bad. And it becomes so convoluted then. You don't need that extra mechanism or that extra cog in the conspiracy wheel to make sense of the first part of it. The first part to me seems completely reasonable, that most of this stuff is a psyop or most of this stuff is our own technology. And I think the history of a lot of UFO belief bears out Greer's initial thesis. Of course, Greer also is somebody who invented the C5 protocols, which are essentially how you go out into the desert and meditate and flash lights in the sky and talk to the Space Brothers, which as a UFO historian, is nothing different to what the contactees were doing in the 1950s, essentially, the George Adamskys and folks like that who were supposedly talking to the good ETs. So that part of it, you kind of lose me. But when you talk about just the first part, you have me on board. People like Lou Elizondo, I don't know Lou personally. I'm very suspicious again of anybody who comes out supposedly with government permission, which is what Lou said he has. He can say so much, but he'll never say any more because he's a good patriot and everything else is his normal spiel. That isn't a controlled leak. That isn't controlled. And when I say controlled leak, it might not even be true. It might be all a psyop. There's been a lot of people come forward with real pedigrees in either military or private intelligence saying these type of things. And that incidentally has been the case since the beginning of the popularization of flying saucers being extraterrestrials back in the 1950s. Like if you look at the board of NICAP, which was the first major civilian UFO investigation group headed by Donald Kehoe, the ex-Marine major, most of his board were like ex-admirals and ex-CIA directors. So you have to wonder when there's those type of people coming out from the military and from the intelligence agencies sitting at the top of the private civilian boards, then those private civilian boards don't seem to me to be very much more than just an ongoing mouthpiece for the government or a way the government continues to collect information and data and what the UFO people are believing. And that's just common sense. As if you just let this stuff run rampant, as if you just let people running around the edges of Area 51 doing whatever they wanted to do and not want to know what they were actually getting up to and what they were seeing and what they were telling people, it makes sense that the government would have that kind of program in place. You don't even have to think that there's a nefarious agenda, and there might be. I have no way of knowing. But it certainly makes sense that they'd want to control the flow of UFO information. And back to the Paul Dennewitz affair and back to William Moore, perhaps the area's most significant ufologist in the late 70s, early 80s, essentially the man who popularized Roswell, because it had been forgotten after 1947. The whole UFO community didn't talk about the Roswell affair from 1947 until the late 70s and early 80s, primarily based on that book which William Moore wrote with Charles Berlitz about Roswell, the first real Roswell book. And Moore comes out at the MUFON convention in 1989 and says, I was an AFOSI asset. I was feeding you all information and I was essentially doing surveillance on you all. So we know that they're there doing that. So what's Lou Elizondo's motive? I don't know, but it's difficult to think. He's himself has said he's been allowed to say so much. I mean, so you don't even have to get conspiratorial about it.
Well, we don't have to get conspiratorial about this, too, because the government accidentally releases documents of psychoelectric weapons. And if you go here and see what this is released, here's what got me with when it comes to alien abduction and all this kind of stuff. Controlled dreams, force waking visions, some synced with body motion. Like, there's so much stuff here. Sudden violent induced changes to hearing. How many people have ringing in their ears right now? Like, all of this, and this is microwave technology, which brings in like the 5G and all that kind of stuff that's happening. But I went down this rabbit hole, and they started this in the 1970s. So imagine from 1970 till now, how far they've come. These people that have alien abduction stories.
This looks like it's part of like MK Ultra, like mind control, and you know. Looks like it has a lot to do with that. I mean, and then you're talking about forced waking vision, someone with body motion. That sounds like UFO abduction stories. You know what I mean?
And even controlled dreams. Like, you could have a dream that seems so real that you're there. I've had those myself, not alienistic in nature or anything, or abduction, but controlled dreams, forced movement of jaw and clacking of teeth. How many people grind their teeth now? Force manipulation of airways, including external controlled force speech. So I go down the rabbit hole, and these documents are available. Everybody just has to go look at it on government pages. They've been released. You got to go and read. You have to read this stuff. Sudden overheating, all body pain, forced caffeine. And then how many times, because I've done this UFO stuff. I've researched this. I was a big believer in aliens and UFO until I went down my rabbit hole in 2020, 2021. How many times do people say that they hear a humming noise before they encounter a UFO or an alien encounter? What's that frequency? What level's that on? Because frequency plays a whole big role in all this stuff. And it manipulates your brain. It manipulates your mind. It's a battlefield of the mind, in my opinion. There we go. I'm done. there's no question there. That's just my opinion. So, yeah,
I'll be honest. I'm not an expert in any of that stuff. But what I do think is that there are enough black budgets, and there's enough money which just disappears, billions and trillions of dollars, which can't be accounted for over the span of, you know, since the national security state started in 1947. So much money goes Lord knows where. I mean, has it gone into projects like that? Likely. Has it gone into things like Tic Tac? Likely. Has it gone into things we can't even imagine? Absolutely.
Well, look at the budget NASA has every day. NASA has like $60 million budget a day in advertising. How much could they manipulate us?
Everything. Period. All those photos that you see of NASA and all that stuff out of outer space, those are our artist renditions, if you really look into it.
Yeah.
They're actually not photographs.
I almost believe flat earth people at this point. I have not gone that far, but very convincing at this, but I don't trust anything anymore. And especially with UFO and aliens and going down these pipelines of and laser technology is absolutely advanced in so many ways. And drones, we got all these drones now that people don't even understand. And then they were saying that there was a meteor that hit Texas, you know, which Texas would be a prime location to target if I was the enemy. And if you look stuff up, they have meteor missiles that looks like meteors. And it's something intercepted. It exploded in air. Everybody heard it. All of this stuff, I do believe, is ran personally. And this is the only time I'll say this. I believe this is government. I believe that we were attacked. I believe in this recent weeks or months, we were attacked. They covered it up under the UFO alien entity type stuff on news media. But does really, truly UFOs truly exist? I don't think so anymore. I think it's military UFOs.
I don't think we're being, my personal opinion is I don't believe we're being visited by extraterrestrials from another planet. I just don't, or from another solar system. I do think that people who believe in UFOs, and even some skeptics, it's very easy to try to lump everything into the same pile, which I don't think we should do. Like a Tic Tac video might have nothing to do with a weird light floating behind my trees in my back 40 tonight, which might have nothing to do with a distant bright star-sized light moving in the sky, which might have nothing again to do with a strange figure standing over my bed at night, which might seem like an alien abduction. All of these things could be entirely different. The Tic Tac video might be advanced US technology. The light moving in my back 40 might be swamp gas or something else. The bright light somebody mistakes in the distance might be a satellite or the planet Venus. And when they're traveling in their car, it could be a drone. The thing beside somebody's bed might be sleep paralysis, or it could be something supernatural. But my point is, what UFO believers tend to do is, and incidentally, a lot of people in different kind of paranormalish fields do the same thing, is every piece of evidence which seems to be, or every story which seems to be anomalous or in any way related to a potential flying saucer or extraterrestrial visitation or UFO, they tend to lump over the same umbrella, under the same umbrella. So it's probably important to think that there could be a lot of different things happening, including the things we've talked about tonight, including maybe out there supernatural things or out there alternative reality things, or just people making simple misidentifications, or people having, you know, some kind of psychotic or even a psychic episode. Let's not say psychotic, because there's certainly negative connotations with that. But we still don't entirely understand some of the ways the mind works. So there could be elements of us being affected by electromagnetic, you know, waves or something, and we have a vision of something. My point is I think what's considered the UFO phenomenon is probably a lot of different phenomena, and some of it might be genuinely anomalous, and some of it might just be so diverse our mistake is trying to put it all in the same box.
I have one thing I want Will to take over after this, because I've talked a lot here in the last few minutes, but I have researched this 5G stuff, and I'm a big advocate for mental health. I've had my mental health issues, anxiety especially, over the years. And it seems like the areas that have all the 5G towers, because there's a grid, you can look this up and find the grid. You will find these 5G towers areas that's more, it has a lot more towers than other rural, is that how you say
rural.
That? Rural.
Rural. That's Southern areas. Coming out. Wow. Yeah,
rural areas. But the places that have more of these 5G towers have more sightings, more visions, more psychotic or emotional episodes, other than some other areas that don't have that. And if you go out west where you are, Dean, too, because they use the west too for, I think, a lot of experiments in the sky, because they don't have to worry about anybody maybe possibly seeing it or possibly dying from anything. So, but the areas that they do things in, they have more 5G towers there.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and I mean, think about it, though. It makes kind of perfect sense. I mean, if you're into the paranormal field, they say that if you're in an area that has a high, you know, area of electromagnetic pulse, I mean, that will make you feel like you're seeing things and maybe seeing things that are actually not there. So why wouldn't 5G do that? But again, you know, that's a whole other separate thing. I mean, there's so many things, you know, that could, you know, really, you know, you could put two and two together as far as UFOs and being able to see them. I mean, fault lines, we could talk about that, you know, throughout the United States. I mean, that's a huge thing, you know, fault lines and the energies behind that. I mean, there's so many other things that, you know, you really could delve into.
And I'm incidentally not above suggesting that some of this might be some genuinely anomalous phenomenon that we don't understand, like, for lack of a better term, something paranormal or something supernatural. But I don't think the majority of it is. I don't think the Tic Tac videos are. I don't think a lot of the standard stuff is. Sometimes do people have experiences which are very difficult to explain using any skeptical model? I think sometimes. Mm-hmm. Sometimes.
I call that China. So, that's what I call that. It's China. Or Russia. Russia, because I have a video. I have a Tiki Talkie video. let's play this one.
Here we go. Kip, and it is exactly what it looks like, a flying saucer, and it came very close to revolutionizing the aerospace industry as we know it. Introduced as a concept in the late 70s, the E could quickly gain traction as a potential successor to modern-day aircraft. Due to its central engines pointing downward, the E-kip would create a cushion of air underneath it, negating the need to be equipped with traditional landing gear. This allowed the aircraft to take off and land from unprepared runways, or even water, from a distance of only half a kilometer. Also, due to its massive wing surface, the E-kip generated huge amounts of lift, far in excess of literally any other commercial aircraft, contemporary or current.
So I cut the beginning off that. I had a screen record that, but that was from Russia, Soviet Union. So they're starting to develop this post-World War II. And so we're in competition because I can tell you why, but I'm not going to tell you why. With Russia, because I have a whole other viewpoint on World War II and what happened. But we've become super afraid of Russia and their technology and stuff. So we're anti-Russia. So Russia's doing this in the 70s, you know, with the kind of like coming off. And then it said lift in there. So when I was watching that, I made a comment in our event page. I'm like, is lift pre-programming us, predictive programming? To are we going to be lifting? But I honestly believe all UFO stuff that people say is UFO is military. I do. I think it's military government. They have all this secret hidden agendas, and we are in a direct competition of Soviet Union, aka Russia. So if I'm in competition with a country or competition with somebody else, I want to talk bad. I want to talk smack. Like, you know, the whole entire time, I'm going to make people hate them. But are they more advanced? I think so. I think Russia and China, and they've come together this past week. And I don't want to get this so political because I'm going to be talking about this next week on my political show. But they've come together now. Like, what freaking UFOs are we going to see now? Like, what's going to be up in the sky? It's almost like a battle of the skies.
Maybe that'll be the Third World War. The Third World War will be sources clashing. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Science fiction movie. I think to a degree, again, I think a lot of the stuff, i.e. Tic Tac videos, is just government, probably ours. And I think probably China has similar things. I think the Russians probably have similar things as well. I do think it's important to recognize, though, that there are elements of UFO experiences which predate the national security state. And I'm not talking that there was a flying saucer phenomenon then, because there wasn't until 1947, which is of course significant because that was the same year the National Security Act was signed, and it was the same year the CIA was founded. It was really the beginning of the closing of open American society. It was the beginning of actually having secret spaces and secret places where people couldn't go. That kind of didn't exist like it did post-World War II, prior to World War II. All of that said, I do think that you can look at some UFO experiences. And I'm not talking about flashing, you know, metallic craft in the sky, although even that sometimes. I'm talking about things like encounters with entities or psychic type visions or things like sleep paralysis, which obviously probably have a more biological and understandable, you know, explanation. But there's a history of things similar to the UFO similar to some aspects of what UFO believers consider the UFO phenomenon, which date back through history. There's a religious type component or a supernatural type component or a paranormal type component where you can look at some modern UFO reports. Often encounter reports with the supposed beings or entities or whatever that do seem similar to previous stories in folklore, previous stories in religious tracts or previous reports in the paranormal literature. So perhaps that's another element of the flying saucer mystery, which needs to be separated out from the things which are just misidentifications, the things which are just, you know, US government or Chinese government or psyops or whatever, that there might be another component as well. And I hate to throw the baby out entirely with the bathwater, even though as an academic, I couldn't look at that type of element of it. I couldn't say, well, maybe there really is something. I was very neutral. But I do think that there's a real potential that some of this is a genuine anomalous phenomenon. And I don't think the Tic Tac videos are, just to be very clear on that. But some of it is, I think.
TikTok, Tic Tac?
Maybe, right?
maybe that's some kind of, as you were saying, predictive programming or
let me tell you, assure you, any video that I ever share about TikTok, I'll research it before I share it.
No. I was talking about the Tic Tac videos. When I say Tic Tac videos, yeah. I mean those little craft that were
the black and white video. Yeah.
You know, the video of the.
I don't know about this. No.
This is the thing.
Something you eat in your mouth.
No, they look like Tic Tacs. That's why it's called Tic Tac. Yeah, they look like a Tic Tac. That's where they get the name from. And it was that video that was supposedly leaked from, you know, Navy fighter pilot gun. Camera footage. That was what was kind of the main thing that brought the UFO phenomenon back to the forefront of media and government interest. Okay. It's kind of what cracked the egg again in 2017, I think, was when the New York Times article dropped.
Commander David Fravor, who was the one who came out and was spearheading that, and he was the commander of the Naval Army that basically gave that account that Dr. Dean's talking about. But I mean, it's a great, story. Again, Dr. Dean is right. Again, when you're talking about people that are in the government, is it that they're allowed to talk about it? And maybe is it just their spin on it? But then again, you look at history and then you see, you know, all these like classical paintings from the 1400s and 1500s of UFOs in the background. And then you talk about the Nazi bell. And then a lot of things point to like this is like something that's a lot older than what we actually think. You know, this is not something that just came up in the 1940s and, you know, started from there. This has been something from a long time coming, I think.
Well, I also just look at the comparisons between, for example, something I'm fascinated with, fairy faith. And I'm not talking about Tinkerbell. I'm talking about the old, you know, Celtic traditions. And every culture almost has its own fairy faith. But the idea of contact with non-human humanoid beings that we would interact with, would, you know, sometimes help us, often harm us. There used to be cultural warnings about how you shouldn't deal with these things, or if you encountered them, how you should behave. There clearly seems to have been, whether there was a reality or not, an almost global understanding that there were other things which were like us but weren't us and had perhaps additional powers to us that you had to be very careful dealing with. And when you read some of those stories, just to stay with fairy faith, the Irish version for a while, there are real commonalities with a lot of UFO abduction reports, or certainly a lot of UFO contact encounters. And could this all be some type of, you know, psychic phenomenon, i.e. a psychological phenomenon, perhaps? But that, I think, is something separate again to the Tic Tac videos and to the type of discussion we've had mainly tonight. So when I talk about UFOs, and I tend to look at most of it that's pushed in the media likely being some type of government spin, I think that's true. But I do think there is another component of the phenomenon which to me is more interesting. And what's more interesting is those religious or paranormal or folkloric traditions which we see come through to UFO belief. Does that mean they're physically real? Perhaps not, but regardless, I think it says something important about us as a species and the way we interact with the unknown and what we think about the unknown. So, yeah, it's just another component to the mystery, I guess.
Mm. Dr. Dean, what's your opinion on Bob Lazar? This is a guy that's come out in the last 5 years.
That was one of my questions.
This guy has come out in the last 5 years and told this very amazing story. He's been on everywhere. I mean, a lot of the stuff that he says is like, okay, it sounds like it could be possible. But then again, it's like, where is this coming from?
You're right. Lazar came back big recently. But of course, he originally came out in the 80s, and he was part of that initial formulation of what everybody believes about UFOs now. Our ideas about Area 51, which are as significant as our ideas about Roswell, which are as significant as our ideas about MJ-12, all seem to be he mightn't have been part of that cadre I was talking about before, but he's certainly another person who was influential in the development of that belief system. I don't know Bob Lazar. I've never spoken to him. I'm, again, suspicious of anybody who comes forward saying these type of things. There's an interesting documentary which people can watch for free on Vimeo now. We screened it at Midwest Weird Fest just this year. It actually won Best Short Documentary. It's called The Conspiratologist. And it's about the Japanese-American UFO researcher Norio Hayakawa. Fascinating individual. I've also had him on Talking Weird. And Jason McLean and I also talked about The Conspiratologist on the other show I do on the Untold Radio Network, Mysterious Library. Norio Hayakawa, back in the day, visited Bob Lazar at his home, and they have some of the footage there. And Norio tells a story that when they were there interviewing Bob Lazar, this is back in the 80s, that there were two men who kind of hovered around Lazar the whole time. One of them was actually operating this weird machine thing. It's a fascinating story. It's in the Conspiratologist, but Norio also spoke about how his house that they went to didn't seem like a real house. It didn't seem lived in. It was very sparsely furnished. It just seemed almost like it was a prop situation. So I suspect, and again, I have no way of proving this or not proving this, my suspicion is Lazar was either himself a con man, or more likely he was part of some type of intentional release of information. Because if Lazar really was somebody who had been working on flying saucers in Area 51, are you trying to tell me they wouldn't have disappeared him? I mean, really, would they just have let him come out and go and tell all the, because he was floating around for a little while before, you know, he was doing shows with George Knapp in, you know, silhouettes and things. Yeah. He was talking to other ufologists. He was taking people to the black mailbox, which ultimately became the white mailbox, I think, when they repainted. I've been there in Area 51. It's where Lazar said you could go at a certain time, look at the sky. Sorry, what's that?
Did you raid Area 51?
No, this is long ago. This is when I was doing my PhD dissertation. But there's a place you could go where Bob Lazar would tell people and take people, which was called the Black Mailbox. It was actually just the mailbox of a local rancher, Steve Medlin. But if you went there, that's from the position you could see at a certain time every night. I think they even called it like Old Faithful or something. Mm-hmm. You could see some UFO tests from behind the hills because Area 51's, you know,
the
over
Black
there.
Mailbox?
Now, but when I was there, it had been repainted because Steve Medlin got sick of people graffitiing it and damaging it. But it didn't help because everybody then knew it was the white
they
mailbox,
knew already
right?
by that yeah. time, right. And see,
but
yeah,
my point is I suspect Bob Lazar either intentionally or unintentionally. And you know what? Maybe Lazar was genuine. Maybe they took Lazar in and showed him certain things and then let him loose. That's possible as well.
Did they use psychoelectric weaponry on him and just let him go out as a government person that's worked in the field to see what he would say to help other people come in to believe? They want the masses to believe this stuff. So when it comes down to it, because you can go into Project Bluebeam, if you want to talk about that, in things that have developed over the years or the decades. So I would honestly think, coming from a business point of view, I need some samples. So I would use somebody as a sample, and I'm going to put him out there like I'm going to Sam's and getting that one little cup and taking a sample of it and eating it. And it's so believable. It's like kind of like limited hangout is what the CIA calls it, where they give you enough truth in the beginning. Then it's followed up with lies, 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 lies. But the truth was so big in the beginning, that's, you're stuck with that. You're going to stay with that. Your mind is not going to change. I think, coming from a government point of view, business point of view, I would do that.
And I also think, even if we wind it back a little bit, I think even coming from a government point of view, if you just wanted to kind of downplay, or not downplay is the wrong word, you almost overplay it. You spin the UFO story that Area 51, Dreamland, is the testing ground for flying saucers. Mm-hmm. So it sounds so ridiculous, but if anybody sees a weird light, it's like, that's one of those back-engineered flying saucers they're flying. So it distracts from what might actually be tested there, because that area, the Dreamland area, had been a testing base, I think, going back to the 50s. Apparently, back in the day before they extended the border, you could literally go and picnic if you wanted to. Hardly anybody did, but supposedly you could literally almost go back up and picnic near where the runway was and watch like the U-2s or whatever they were testing take off. But then they increased the area around that. But you can see how stories of UFOs helps. For example, there was another real scandal in Area 51. They were doing open pit burning of all kinds of hideous chemicals. And I think some of the workers were getting cancer and other hideous related illnesses. But then does anybody pay attention to that type of very human tragedy that's happening in Area 51?
No,
when all anybody's thinking about is the Bob Lazar sports model UFO that they're, you know, back engineering in the basement. Yeah. So it's handy to have that.
That's interesting you say that, because when you're having all this stuff happening all over the nation, I'm 2 hours away from East Palestine with the train derailment. And then now just came out just this past week that like 400,000 gallons of radioactive waste was dumped into the Mississippi River. Also in November, it was confirmed and everything, but just now released. So that's interesting that you talk about that, Dean. Are we being also sidetracked from all of this stuff and talking about UFOs and all this stuff up in the sky when we need to be looking what's actually happening on Earth?
I think that's very possible. I think it's a bit like the film Wag the Dog, you know, where you engineer some kind of war or crisis or distraction. Mm-hmm. And it makes people look over at this hand while this hand's where they should be looking. It's literally like a magician's, you know, sleight of hand trick. You just direct the attention here while maybe people should be paying attention over there. I'm sure that's happened many times.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, predictive programming, there's that movie that's out. I watched it on Netflix. What was it called?
Noise.
White noise. But here's interesting why they use white noise is because the white noise is in this psychoelectric weaponry.
Mm-hmm. No, I haven't seen that.
I watched it. It talks all about this. This is predictive programming. They do it a lot. I was not a big believer in this until 2020. The best thing, COVID. The best thing that happened to me was COVID.
You can start researching a lot of stuff here.
I read a lot. I'll tell you this. I hate the Bush family. And my dogs was G.W. Bush and Jeb Bush. Jeb is still alive. I had to put G.W. down. Will, you remember with G.W.? Yeah. I had to put him down. I love the Bush family. They are so corrupt. I wish I could change Jeb's name. I'm not going to. But yeah. A lot of great awakenings happened with me in 2020, and this UFO stuff, I honestly believe almost, I would say 98% of me believes now it's all military influenced.
I think most of the stuff which is front and center in the discussion, like Tic Tac, for example, and disclosure and all these kind of things, I totally agree with you. I do think there might be lots of different aspects of what the phenomenon is. I think it's a phenomena, but I think the one which we spend most of our time focused on because of the way the media talks about it and the way the government talks about it now is primarily probably some type of military spin or cover-up or disinfo or, you know, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll let you have it since you started the show, because we got about we got 6 minutes left, and we always let our guests go, Dean, before we close out. But since Will started, I'll let you do the last final question, Will.
Thank you. Well, Dean, the biggest part of, you know, ufology is, of course, you know, not just the seeing of them, the sightings and things of that nature, and photographs and videos and stuff, but also abductions. What's your opinion on, you know, the famous cases of like Benny and Barney Hill, Travis Walton, things of that nature? There's a lot of those, and they've been made into movies. And I don't know. I mean, is this the military, you know, putting their handiwork in there? I mean, what's your opinion?
I know some people do think it's the military putting their handiwork in, and certainly Rick Doty, who I mentioned before, who was the kind of front man in the Paul Benowitz affair, he actually, when he was on my show, I had him on Talking Weird once, and he said it in other places as well, said that there are government programs which fake alien abductions. But that said, I don't think Betty and Barney Hill, which is really the first contemporary alien abduction report. There were previous ones. There was a famous one in South America, the Villa-Boas abduction. There's other strange abductions which are very similar to alien abductions prior to that. But the one which kind of set the direction that it went was the Betty and Barney Hill abduction. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I suspect the Betty and Barney Hill abduction was And there's no way, of course, anybody can prove this or not prove it. I think a lot of that had a lot to do with the psychic stress that Betty and Barney Hill were under being a mixed racial couple in the early 1960s.
Oh, I'm sure.
When you read their book, The Interrupted Journey, there are a number of things which just don't make any physical or literal sense, but they make perfect metaphysical or metaphorical, more accurately, sense. Like when Barney Hill is remember this was all remembered under hypnosis, other than the fact that they saw a UFO, the actual experience was remembered just in dreams and in hypnosis. Right. When Barney, the husband, who was a black man, was being hypno-regressed, he described the aliens at different times, very different ways. At one point he said, they look like redheaded Irishmen. Now, of course, the gray aliens don't look anything like redheaded Irishmen, which is where it kind of leans eventually. And when he's asked why, it's because he said, well, because Irishmen hate people of my race. This is literally what he says. And I'm hoping if I ever encounter an Irish person who's friendly, I make a point of being extra friendly or something. Another point in his hypno-regression tapes or his hypnosis tapes, he says they're Nazis. They look like Nazis. They're dressed like Nazis. So again, you start to see this pattern? Obviously racial kind of, you know, problem, pattern, you know, developing.
Yeah. Subconscious, pattern.
On that trip, they felt menaced by some teenagers, I think, when they stopped somewhere along the way. Previously, on another long drive, they'd been actually chased and menaced by teenagers who presumably were giving them a hard time because they were, you know, a mixed-race couple back in the 1960s. Mm-hmm. There's also psychological elements within Betty's account. Betty herself couldn't have children. So it's interesting that she's given a painful pregnancy test. It's interesting that she describes the extraterrestrials as looking like mongoloid children that she works with because she was a type of social or care worker. So there's a lot of elements within the story which seem to be more, I suppose, indicative of some deeper psychological issues going on in them. And of course, eventually all of these stories come together to present us with something more similar to what we're used to now, kind of shorter statured, you know, 5-foot-ish. And they're a little bit taller in the Betty and Barney Hill story than later, but they're about, I think, 5 foot. And they're kind of very much the kind of proto version of the gray extraterrestrials. But when you read that account by, and the book, it's actually really worth reading The Interrupted Journey, but it has transcripts of the psychiatrist who did the work on them, who incidentally didn't think they were really abducted by aliens either. And when you read those transcripts, you think something really interesting happened here psychologically, but perhaps it was what's called a folie à deux, where there's one person who's a dominant person who seemed to be Betty, and then Barney was picking up on some of the things she was saying. And so much of the story seems to be based upon the personal things which they were dealing with. Betty's inability to have children, Barney's genuine fears of being in a situation where he might be physically damaged or physically harmed or killed, perhaps even, because he was married to a white woman in a time where this was very rare. So I think something fascinating happened there psychologically. And I think we're still seeing the kind of this playing out now in abduction narratives. I think it kind of grew from there, obviously through Whitley Strieber's Communion, the cover of which that book, that menacing, terrifying face, which not just the cover of the book, it was a massive ad campaign. It was all over the place. It was on bus shelters, even in Sydney. Oh, yeah. They sold badges with it on. That imagery was so potent, and perhaps it was based on such a potent folie à deux fable originally that it just struck a nerve. And when people now have sleep paralysis or when people have a weird dream, they know what to expect. They know what the narrative is. That's very quick, and I know we're running out of time, but I could talk about alien abductions for an hour.
I'm fascinated by it. You're going to have to come back on.
Oh, sure. I'd love to. I had such a great time.
Every guest we have is part two. I told you, Dr. Dean, that it was going to go by fast.
It goes by fast every time.
Every time we need 2 hours, and we need sponsors so I can do some 5-minute little commercials where we can have 2 5-minute breaks and play all the sponsors. So contact us if you want to be a sponsor. But Dr. Dean Bertram, can you tell people real quick? I have your links in the description where they can find you. We'll let you go and we'll close out the show.
Sure. I would suggest if they want to watch Talking Weird or Mysterious Library or listen to it, to go to untoldradioam.com, because both of those shows are available there. If they want to come to a fantastic film festival next March, we just finished it. It's always the first weekend of March. Or they're filmmakers. Maybe they make paranormal documentaries or horror films or sci-fi or whatever. They suggest submitting to Midwest Weird Fest for next year, which is midwestweirdfest.com.
And we didn't even get to talk about that.
That's okay. People can go and check out the website.
That's all we're going to have to do, part two. So thank you, Dr. Dean, for coming on. I'm glad. I watch your shows and your interviews too. Thank you so much.
We'll have you back on soon.
And we appreciate you and all the hard work you've done in the UFO alien genre of research. So thank you.
Thank you. It was such a joy talking to you guys. I had a lot of fun.
All right. Have a great night. Likewise. We'll talk to you next time.
All right. Thank you.
There we go. We have it. UFOs. Everybody go outside tonight. Go look up the skies.
Yeah, there's a lot of different avenues when it comes to UFO, you know, ufology and stuff like that. I mean, it goes so many different ways. And Dr. Dean is so, you know, knowledgeable about a lot of this stuff. So I really appreciate somebody like him coming on.
Well, and my biggest concern is when media pitches out UFOs, I don't want people to automatically go to alien.
Right.
You know, yeah. I think a lot of people go to alien invasion and all that kind of stuff. UFOs is unidentified flying object. It means we don't know what it is.
I like aliens. I don't know. I like the aliens. I don't listen.
I mean, I've dated a couple of them.
I think I have too in my time. Well,
hold on. Especially listening to.
When I going this way, when I going that way, you know. like Men in Black.
That was prior, what was the first one online?
Match.com?
Match.com. Well, they can align their picture. Oh my Lord, have mercy.
Lord.
Everybody right now, when you listen to this show, even on 107.7 FM, we are radio. Go listen to Katy Perry's E.T. right now. Mm, and I'm going to just put this in here for a moment. My middle name is Taylor. So I'm E.T. Men's House.
E.T. Men's House, you alien you.
Out of this world, baby.
There you go.
So thank you, everybody, for tuning in tonight. Please share this out if you're watching via social media. It helps our guests or show the network. We love you all. Please follow Will at darkfringeradio.com. And on Facebook, we're going to be back here again next Friday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Central with Mike Ricksecker. We're going to be talking all things triangle, which is Illuminati.
Ooh, the Bermuda Triangle, which I'm next to right here. we're talking about that triangle.
Oh, okay. No. He did the Alaska Triangle book. He's Alaska Triangle. But I want to bring in Bermuda because I was at the Bill Baggs Lighthouse down there.
I've been there.
And Bermuda Triangle, my old pastor, Pastor Garner, my church, went and investigated that back in the 80s. And they told me, I'll tell the story next week. Everybody's going to have to.
Cliffhanger.
I was too immature to listen to it. And it was on A-Track. Actually, he visited that in the 70s. It was on A-Track. It was the worst sounding things I've ever heard in my entire life. You're going to have to listen to it next week. We're going to be talking about triangles with Mike Ricksecker.
Love it.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. We love you. Have a great weekend. Be back here next. It's the last Friday of March.
Yes, it's the last Friday of March.
The 31st. So 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Thank you for everybody that's listening at 107.7 FM New Orleans. Safe travels home. Thank you all.
Love you, New Orleans. Yes.